Good morning and welcome to hour number two of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Jason Croft is at the controls. In this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking with Sister Patricia Daly. She is the executive director of the Tri-State Coalition for Responsible Investment. This is an organization of 40 Roman Catholic dioceses and congregations in the Newark metropolitan area. And as such, she is one of this country's most high-profile activist investors. She's been working in this area of socially responsible investing now for over 25 years. She represents her institutions, those of the Tri-State Coalition, on a much larger body, and that is the National Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility. Now, this is a collection of Catholic, Protestant, and Jewish organizations, and between them, they hold more than $110 billion in investments. Sister Pat is also the corporate responsibility representative for the Sisters of St. Dominic of Caldwell, New Jersey. She also consults for the American Baptist Churches in their socially responsible investment program. And over the years, she's been involved in negotiations with some very big companies on a number of issues, things like human rights and labor and environmental concerns and international debt and capital flows. She does a lot of speaking on these subjects, has indeed been featured on a variety of places, including the New York Times and CNN and 60 Minutes, and she's joining us this morning by telephone. And as we talk, questions are certainly welcome. Anyone is welcome into the conversation. We ask only that people just try to be brief so that we can keep moving along, but anyone can call. 333-9455 is the number here for Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line, and that is good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So again, in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. Sister Pat, hello.
Yes, good morning. Good afternoon, everyone.
Well, thank you very much for talking with us. We certainly appreciate it. I wanted to begin by perhaps making a distinction between two things that can go together but perhaps don't necessarily go together, and that would be these two terms. One would be socially conscious or socially responsible investing, and the other would be shareholder activism. In the one case, I think we're talking about people who, in their own investments, they want that to be in harmony with their own values. That's sort of one thing, but they're still concerned with getting a return. And then I wonder, are there also people whose primary concern actually is the activism part, and the investing part is not such a big deal? Or truly, are we talking about people here like you and the others in these organizations that actually do have investments and are worried about their returns, but at the same time they do have the ethical concerns as well?
Socially responsible investing really takes in a number of maybe strategies, we can call them, in under one umbrella. Certainly screens, screening your portfolio, given a variety of priorities that you may have. Voting proxies, when they come through each year. Now, you really give up a voting, the ability to vote when you invest in a mutual fund. However, you can certainly still ask the mutual fund to be voting in certain ways. Then there's, in socially responsible investing, there's also a commitment to community investing or, in some cases, lower interest lending for maybe sustainable housing or women or minority-owned businesses, et cetera, to really provide monies and investments in areas that are not necessarily going to be as lucrative, but a much higher social gain. And then there is also the investors who use the power they have. Just about any investor at this point can file a shareholder resolution as long as you have $2,000 worth of shares in a company. And so socially responsible investors could do all four of those actions. They may also just screen investments.
Yeah. Well, I think certainly one thing that, that is true is that in recent years, maybe not so recent, but there certainly has been an increase in all of this, in socially conscious investing. So for the, again, for those people who are saying, in my investing, I want to make sure that it's in keeping with my values. So there are certain things that either I do want to invest in or I don't. And certainly there are now a number of mutual funds that address those concerns. But at the same time, it seems that it, on, in terms of shareholder activism and people and organizations doing the kinds of things that you've done with shareholder resolutions dealing with a variety of issues, that, that this large world of that we're talking about overall is on the increase. There are more and more people doing these kinds of things.
According to the Social Investment Forum, and that's really a network of financial managers and investors who work together to really refine some investment tools, et cetera, and to promote socially responsible investing. The statistics now, and you can, you know, find really the more extensive research on socialinvest.org, but the research now is that well over 10% of the of investment dollars are used and invested with some type of screen voting activities or community investing.
Mm-hmm.
Those are trillions of dollars worth.
And can one say then that that has had a measurable, a recognizable impact on how big corporations do business?
I would say very much so. And we can look back at the South Africa days and the divestment movement here in the United States. And, you know, certainly, you know, we continue to meet people who are either grew up in South Africa or who have been involved in, truly involved in the struggle, who said, you know, really understand how, you know, this movement here in the States and internationally at least lent a pressure on the change in that society. There are certainly today we can see many examples of companies who are working on sustainability agendas, who are working on reduction goals to bring their greenhouse gas emissions down, and many of these issues and concerns were first seen by religious investors maybe 10, 20, 15 years ago. And so one of the things that that is a reality for us at the Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility is that when our members meet with corporations, we do so assuring confidentiality. The companies we work with know that we're not leaving a meeting and heading to the press to announce we got this from them. Any kind of work that we do together, we would agree to announce together. And so because of the confidentiality piece in many of these dialogue sessions, or in all of the dialogue sessions, it's very hard for us to be providing let's say, the public or even foundations or others, the clear sense of we brought this issue to them and these are the changes that they made. Probably that has done some disservice to, you know, the real power of this work that we've done. At the same time, you know, I've just been so happy that we've actually seen such cooperation among investors and executives of corporations and such clear change.
Hmm. Let me just very quickly introduce again our guest, Patricia Daly. She's a Dominican sister of Caldwell, New Jersey, who has for now over 25 years been working in the area of corporate responsibility and socially responsible investing. She serves as the executive director of the Tri-State Coalition for Responsible Investment. This is an organization of Roman Catholic dioceses and congregations around the New York metro area. She also represents these institutional investors to the National Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility. And this is is a much larger organization that includes Catholics and Protestants and Jews, that between all of them, organizations that hold more than $110 billion in investments. And we're talking this morning about shareholder activism and what it is and how it works, something that she's been involved in for quite a long time now. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free 800-222-9455. I think probably people would be interested in hearing a little bit of the story of how it is you got into this, because before your first involvements in the world of business and investing and negotiating with corporate boards, you hadn't had a lot of experience, didn't come out of a business background, weren't an economist or anything like that. How did you first become involved in doing this kind of work?
It was really one of those experiences where I describe as God working through the back door. I had entered my congregation. I was a novice in the Dominican community, and I came upon at a community meeting that we had with a few hundred of our sisters information that we owned stock at J.P. Stevens, and ended up reading a number of this, good bit of this material. There was a labor struggle going on at the time, and I ended up chatting with the treasurer of our congregation the next morning, and she basically said, "If you want to go to the meeting, go to the meeting." And I got involved. Went to that stockholder meeting a number of months later, and then ended up meeting many of the people who became my colleagues, who are leaders in different faith communities, who had really just begun to work together in a coalition of investors and faith-based investors to influence change. And so I taught high school. Mostly morality, and my degrees are in mostly scripture and ethics.
Yeah. So again, I guess I want to make sure that people understand your perspective, where you come from on this, is that not only are you interested in doing what you can to promote greater corporate responsibility and to have corporations pay attention to particular issues, also you are charged with making sure that the investments that will benefit your community and take care of your retirement and so forth do pay a respectable concern. So it is you're having to balance these things of the financial interest of your fellow sisters and of all these other people who are involved in this effort.
Absolutely.
Have to keep that in consideration, because you've got your investments have to pay off, but at the same time you're concerned with what's going on in those companies in which you hold stock.
Absolutely. And what I believe this movement has proven over the years, and was rather suspect in the early days, was that you can be a socially responsible investor without taking a hit, a financial hit. I was just reviewing some of the figures in our, in our reporting from the four managers who handle my community's investment strategy, and when we are involved in negotiations with companies, we put a hold on that stock in order to be able to, make sure we're good, we are shareholders in good faith, and that portfolio or that piece of the, it's only a number of stocks that are there, maybe 20 or 30, that unsupervised account is actually outperforming all the other strategies. Hmm. So, we certainly have not taken a hit at all.
Yeah. And just here, I'm thinking maybe just to make sure that I'm clear and people understand that I didn't mean to imply that you yourself was a money manager. You're not a stock picker. You have people to do that.
Absolutely.
But
we hire the professionals to manage the portfolio.
But as a member of the pool of investors, you and obviously the others are concerned about how your investments do.
Absolutely.
It is something that you are concerned about. You've got to make sure that they do return.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay.
Absolutely.
What are there particular issues that concern you most so that in as you deal with the corporations in which you have investments, you would say, yes, these are the things that we're really concerned about?
I find that while I continue to do a good bit of work on human rights with companies and labor rights, sustainable and healthy food and water issues, a good bit of my time is really dedicated to global warming concerns and how climate risk is really affecting the future performance and viability of companies. And you raised before, you know, how do you really kind of, you know, what's your priority here? My congregation has a very, very clear, you know, we have clear mission statements around the plight of the planet and her people. And our sisters just have happened because of the number of our influences over the years are probably known as some leaders in the environmental movement in faith communities. So back in 91, I believe, we filed our first shareholder resolution around concerns around global warming. So we certainly are trying to influence the financial sector as well as many other industries, the auto industry, the oil and gas industry, the many utilities, and a variety of other sectors, and having them attend to their responsibility in this dilemma. And, you know, these, you know, truly horror stories that are already going on and influencing people around the planet because of the change in climate.
Well, let me ask you just to give a specific example, a particular case study. Let's pick one where you feel that you were successful in achieving the goals that you set out to achieve.
I think over the years, during the 90s, I think especially with the global warming concerns, we saw a number, we've seen in the last 16, 17 years now, kind of a different dimensions in the program. When we first started raising the issues, there were many companies that were working together. They had a lobbying firm that they, an organization that was out there really, and they were funding the misinformation around climate. It throughout the 90s, it was a matter of trying to get the companies to realize that there was a precautionary principle at stake here, and that companies needed, for their own sake as well as for the sake of the planet, to at least consider that this was really happening and that they had to take some responsibility for reducing their emissions. That struggle really went on throughout the 1990s, and it was in the beginning of 2000, I'd say, and it was Bill Ford Jr. who stepped aside, and the Ford Motor Company ended up leaving this global climate coalition. Within about 3 or 4 months, just about every company that we were working with ended up leaving. And for, you know, it was a situation where the companies had really acknowledged that, number one, it was actually a good idea to reduce emissions because it saved them millions and millions of dollars every year in energy costs. At the same time, this organization was really doing something that was really contrary to what the companies had already realized what was going on. And so up until those first 7 or 8 years then, you know, it was a matter of just really struggling over what is going on. And then from about 2000, for the last 5 or 6 years, many companies have now been looking at their own greenhouse gas emissions and have been reporting, publicly reporting their carbon footprint. Last week, 315 investors, this is the Carbon Disclosure Project, with assets of $41 trillion, reported their greenhouse gas emissions. And, you know, that's $41 trillion, that's three times the GDP in the United States. That's an enormous amount of asset represented there and, you know, internationally. So obviously this is front and center for many, many companies. Now, rather than just reporting, obviously, we are seeing more and more companies now actually making public goals and targets to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. And that really is the latest resolution that we have before a number of auto companies, utilities, and oil and gas companies, asking them to actually make the commitment to reduce their emissions and what will be the near-term and then the long-term commitments. Mm-hmm. And give us the plan. These are investors who are asking the board of directors and management, in order for us to understand the future profitability of this company, this company needs to have a plan to reduce emissions, especially because policies are coming down the line, regulations. They're already in place internationally. Tell us how you're going to do this so that you can be profitable in the next 10 to 50 years. And so that's the ask now of these resolutions. So we've come a long way from the dissenters, although, you know, there are still some groups and a couple of scientists out there who claim that this is really still not happening. Mm.
We are at our midpoint here. Let me again just very quickly introduce our guest, Sister Patricia Daly. She's a Dominican sister of Caldwell, New Jersey, and has for more than 25 years now been working in the areas of corporate responsibility and socially responsible investing. She serves as the executive director of the Tri-State Coalition for Responsible Investment. This is an organization of Roman Catholic diocese and congregations in the New York metro area, and then she represents these institutional investors to the National Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility. That's 275 Catholic, Protestant, and Jewish organizations that between them, among them, hold more than $110 billion in investments. She's negotiated over the years with some very big companies on a number of issues, including environmental concerns, but also human rights, labor rights, health and tobacco, international debt, and so forth. Among other things, she was very important in forcing General Electric to pay for a cleanup of the Hudson River. And she's been written quite a lot about in national media and does a lot of speaking on this particular issue. And we're pleased she could spend a little time with us here this morning. Questions welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I think just to pick up on something that you were talking about a moment ago, and that is the kind of strategy that you employ. I know that as someone who represents a religious organization, you certainly would be in a position to make to the corporation and its board a strong moral argument that says, we think this is what you should do because it's the right thing to do. And there are apparently people who think maybe that is the kind of tack you should take. It sounds as if rather, though, the kind of approach that you were taking and one that seems to have better potential to be successful is to say to the corporation, look, we're your stockholders. We want you to do well. You want to do well. We think that if you do what we're asking, that it makes good business sense. That is, it's good for the company, and that's what we want. We want the company. We're investors. We want the company to do well. Can you talk about those two kind of strategies and why it is that you tend more to make the business argument rather than the moral argument?
You know, I think this has been kind of I wouldn't say a real struggle for me over the years, but I certainly have been, you know, we take a lot of time and, you know, in our research and our writing and our communication of making the investment case for our concerns. Sometimes it's really just around reputational risk rather than, you know, a variety of other, you know, concerns. A year and a half ago, I had an experience where I was leaving an annual meeting. I was leaving the ExxonMobil meeting, and a retiree followed me out. And I think this is probably also represents kind of the history of the movement where there are so many people now who really do get that socially responsible investing and sustainable practices in businesses really pay off. pay off for the company, pay off for the investors, pay off for the communities where the company works, the pay off for the employees. At any rate, I was leaving this this meeting, and this gentleman followed me, and he said, "You know, sister, we understand the issue. You've been here for years and years. We understand the impact on our investment." He said, "You should be talking about the moral responsibility that this company has." He said, "That's what you should be doing." And he was a real challenge to me, because very often I don't necessarily what I call pull the God card, because I don't really think I've got a direct line to what the truth is than you or any of our listeners here. I do understand that women religious today certainly have a role in society, where we're trying to make the connections between who we are as people of faith and God's creation and the responsibility that we have to the rest of creation and people around the planet. So at this year's ExxonMobil meeting, I did speak to the moral responsibility that we all had to do to really turn this around for people.
And that didn't seem to make that much of an impression on them.
You know, I don't know. Nobody's reported back to me about that. There were some people who did come up to me afterwards, people who were in the audience, and thanked me for making the connections. That we received an historic vote at that for that resolution, asking the company to set targets to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So now that vote was already calculated before I said anything. However, who knows what, sometimes you just need to be truthful and see where it lands.
Well, ExxonMobil is their particular hard case. I mean, they've been one of the most resistant corporations virtually on the planet, it seems. So that's on the one side, although I think, as you say, that it is true that you and others continue to advance these resolutions and that have managed, I think, every time to increase the support. So it's not something that the company can ignore completely, although it's not enough people to compel them to do something that they're not going to want to do.
Right. And I believe the company has taken some steps at this point. They would really be the ones who would need to identify and talk about those steps. But I would say that they certainly do. I think they're recognizing the growing support around this, and they've been in the hot seat for it. One of the things about our shareholder resolutions is that they are non-binding, and U.S. companies, U.S. publicly owned companies in the United States, they're not democratic entities, so we could get 90% of the vote, and the board of directors and management is really not obliged to do anything about it, unless that's in their bylaws that they need to do that. So this is, however, the board of directors and management knows that most investors really don't vote their proxies, and so a 31% vote on a resolution such as this is an enormous support and shouldn't go ignored.
Let's talk with a caller here. We have someone listening in and calling in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Yeah. From a perspective of social justice, what about do you ever get involved in the issue of executive salaries, or is that pretty much not an area that...
We actually do. If our listeners may be interested to go on the ICCR website, iccr.org, and we work in 9 different working groups, and one of those groups is corporate governance, and we do have shareholder resolutions on executive compensation. And beyond the faith communities, many, many other institutional investors now are raising questions and also asking. A new resolution in the last year or so is a resolution called Say on Pay, where they investors are asking to have a say on executive compensation packages. Executive compensation, as you know, is just, you know, it's just gone wild, and it's pretty wild only in this country, although, there are other companies in other countries now who, I believe, see that, you know, what's gotten away with here, and they're trying to replicate that. So it's pretty astounding what some of these packages are.
And then also, what about companies that supply, military in terms of the war and all that kind of stuff? Is there a position on that?
Yes. We have a militarism and violence working group, and we have a new shareholder resolution that's addressing a number of concerns with the public companies who are involved in Iraq.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Other questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. I think perhaps people would be interested in hearing a little bit more about the strategy of the shareholder resolution and how exactly that works.
Mm-hmm.
Doing that, and then what's the company required to do in terms of giving you time to talk about it and then taking a vote? How exactly does it work?
Mm-hmm. Our history, and certainly this still happens today, if we have a concern about something, we usually are contacting the company, mostly by letter. We do that in writing. And we give the company an opportunity to respond. Sometimes they respond. Sometimes they respond inadequately. And sometimes sometimes they're right on target and we can work things out right away. Very often we won't even get a letter back. An investor won't hear back. And so that's when we file a shareholder resolution, and that does get people's attention. In order to do that, you need to have already held the stock for at least a year, and you need to there's a format for a shareholder resolution. It can't be, there's a good bit of legal language in a filing letter. There are guidelines as to actually what you can really ask for in a shareholder resolution. You can't ask a food company to stop making food. That would be ordinary business, and that would be thrown out by the Securities Exchange Commission if they responded to that or challenged that. So you need to have shareholder resolutions that's no more than 500 words, and you need to own at least $2,000 worth of shares.
So then you then, and at the regular shareholders meetings, then you have the opportunity to get up with some, probably not very much time, but some amount of time you can talk about this is what it is, this is why we think it's a good thing, and then all present shareholders get a chance to vote one way or another?
What happens is that, after a shareholder resolution is filed, the company has an opportunity, has a number of months to challenge the resolution before the Securities Exchange Commission to get it off the proxy. And so very often we're in the middle of kind of a legal back and forth where our own attorneys then have to defend the shareholder resolution based on whatever, steps the company has put before us. So if it gets through the security exchange process, or even if a company has actually even challenged it, then it gets printed on the proxy. And the proxy, along with the annual report, gets mailed to every shareholder, or you may get it on the Internet. And the shareholders are asked to vote their proxy. And the vote can take place up until typically what happens is midnight the night before. And so then you've got the shareholder annual meeting of shareholders, and there's a process for each of these annual meetings where you have a couple of minutes to present your resolution, and most times the company really is obliged to offer some time for other shareholders to comment. And so then shareholders present also vote, although you know, for the most part, you know, well over 99% of the vote is already in the night before, and they know those speeches are really not necessarily influencing the vote.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds as if what companies try to do is minimize the number of these things that actually go all the way to the point where shareholders have the opportunity to vote.
Absolutely. And, you know, you can understand that, you know, there are some resolutions that are not necessarily helpful. And in some cases, some of the larger companies might receive 20 to 30 shareholder resolutions. And so they're going to try to narrow that spread down.
So, just going back to where we were talking about at the beginning about the increase in shareholder activism, is it correct to say that over time the number of shareholder resolutions that actually come to the point where shareholders get the opportunity to vote has the number that go all the way through the process has increased?
Yes, it has. Yes, it has. And IRRC, where the Investor Responsibility Research Center, is a website that really tracks all of those numbers.
All right. I have a caller we'll get right to. Just a real quick, I want to introduce again our guest. And we have about 10 minutes left in this part of the show, talking with Sister Patricia Daly. She is the executive director of the Tri-State Coalition for Responsible Investment. This is an organization of Roman Catholics in and around the New York metro area. She represents these institutional investors to the National Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility. And this is a much bigger kind of organization that includes Roman Catholics, Protestants, and Jewish organizations that have significant amount of investment. And by the way, if you're interested in finding out about this organization and their issues, they do indeed have a website. Go to iccr.org and you can find out about them. Here's caller to talk with in Champaign County, line one. Hello.
Yeah, I applaud your effort. I think it's most rhetorical, though, in a way, and it's good to call people on their practices, but you know, there are arbitrage programs or various types of instruments that just automatically buy an item when it goes down. So if you persuade people that to dump one of the worst extractive industries, Freeport-McMoRan or something like that, it's going to be picked up somewhere else. And there's another thing, too. Maybe you're being so effective that you're helping the private equity phenomena happen, where they don't have any even a quasi-democratic function of a stockholder petition, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, Carlyle Group has been into the military boom for quite a while, and they. So I think, you know, it's an admirable thing, and I applaud your work. But there's some inherent limitations, and I'm sure you can speak to some of those.
You're absolutely right. This is a one, you know, these are vehicles that we do use. Carlyle just bought a local company here in the Bronx, Synagro. We've been working with them on their environmental impact in, you know, poor neighborhoods here. And we do have a commitment from Carlyle to continue to work together on that. However, my sense is that, you know, we really haven't worked with Carlyle because it's a private firm, and you know they are not obliged to respond to concerns of the community unless those are, I guess, the only way to respond to that would be legal initiatives by a community. I understand that private equity firms and different companies held by those that We've only seen that the executive compensation packages are actually quite modest in the publicly owned companies as opposed to the private companies. So it is quite interesting. I think too there are many lists out there. You mentioned if we divested from Freeport McMoRan, others would pick up on it. It's why my congregation doesn't have a very lengthy screen, because we are so active in and working with companies. So a Freeport McMoRan is going to stay in our portfolio. I'm not sure it's actually there right now, but you know what I'm saying. It's you know, it's not necessarily going to mean that a company that's in an industry that has all kinds of problems in terms of environmental impact or labor rights, et cetera, is, you know, that the stock is going to drop because nobody will invest in it.
All right, let's go to another caller. This is all Champagne and line number two. Hello.
Good morning. I'm sorry, this is going to be a very simple question because I just tuned in late, but the topic is very interesting. What would you say to somebody who so far in their history of investing has just gone with mutual big name funds like a Fidelity blue chip thing because that's all they know because they don't have time in their career, in their teaching career to investigate all this stuff? How would you get started?
You know, depending upon where your monies are, you know, there are mutual funds out there that are socially screened and funds that are very active in this type of shareholder initiative.
And how are they labeled, or how would you find them?
You could find them through the Social Investment Forum and socialinvest.org.
Mm-hmm. And so you won't find them through a Fidelity or...
Fidelity, actually, you know, it's my understanding that Fidelity at times doesn't even vote their proxies. So these would be questions that you would ask the money manager or your representative. And the other piece of it is I would encourage, you know, if you're an investor in Fidelity, write to the company, ask them what their... you know, their guidelines are for voting proxies, and in, you know, that all mutual funds now in the last 2 or 3 years need to publicly report on the votes that they have, you know, their voting guidelines and the votes that they actually did place for companies in their portfolios. So,
and once I apologize if you did cover this already. Is there any way to find out if there is any social investment done on a local or regional level?
You would have to ask that of the company.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All
You're
right.
Welcome.
Thanks for the call. Others are welcome, and we have about 5 minutes left in this part of the show. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I suppose that there might be some people whose critique of the economy is so severe that they would say that it's just irredeemable, and that for people who have strong moral concerns, that maybe the thing to do is, one might say, yes, it's laudable as an investor for you to try to put your values out there and to do whatever you can to influence the companies in which you invest to be responsible community citizens and treat their workers well and treat the environment well. I suppose some people would say, that's really not going to get us very far, and maybe one shouldn't be an investor at all. Now, I don't know what it is you do with your money, but that they would maybe go as far as to say you should simply, in as much as you can, opt out of what is a bad, inhumane, unfriendly to the earth economic system.
You know, I think investors or people with any kind of discretionary income certainly are making a variety of choices. Maybe monies are only being invested in local projects that you know, they can feel very secure in. Maybe it will only give you a smaller financial return, but it's a very large social return. It's to me, we are involved, whether, you know, from the moment we get up in the morning, the foods that we eat, we are involved in a globalized economy, whether we're investors or not. We are using commodities. We're involved. And whether we're consumers, investors, or citizens or taxpayers, we have a responsibility to be using the mechanisms around us that are, you know, very, very powerful in as social change agents, and I think many of the faith communities have continued to encourage people to see how lifestyles and investment patterns really do affect not only their own lifestyles, but people around the planet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because we are all in this together.
I wanted to ask, maybe you can talk about one more story here about a place where you really thought that you're in, not only yours, but others who are involved in this effort were really significant. And maybe that would be with the GE story. And maybe you could just talk a little bit about that for people. This is something that people perhaps here in the Midwest might not have heard about, but a case where it seems that you were able to really engage this company and get them to move in the direction that you would like.
General Electric was the company that, and part of this was really just leaking, but it's the Hudson River is the largest EPA site, Superfund site in the country. It's the largest PCB spill on the planet. And for decades, General Electric had been trying to at least postpone, if not completely get out of their liability to clean up the Hudson River. And so, you know, there were a number of environmental groups up and down the Hudson who continued to, try to address this concern. The EPA studied the issue for many, many years. And the people here at the Tri-State Coalition wondered if there was a role for us because GE was widely held in our coalition. And we realized we didn't need to duplicate the work of any of the environmental groups or attorneys. So what we did was we were realizing that PCB contamination was clearly a great danger. We could see it even in statistics on developmentally disabled children. We could see it in statistics on fertility concerns of people in neighborhoods up and down the river. And I taught in Jersey City at one point, and there were students who every day their families ate from the Hudson River, and they were eating contaminated fish. And so we started to engage the company and ask them a variety of asks over about a 10-year period of engaging the company in this issue. And, essentially what happened was that the EPA has claimed that, has determined that GE needs to clean up the Hudson River. And so we continue to work with the company on, they had put in enormous amounts of resources in PR and legal strategies to try to delay this, and we ended up getting an enormous vote in the last at the last go round, and we've worked with them ever since. And they report to shareholders how much they continue to pay in this initiative. But right now, it's in the hands of the state and the federal government in terms of the cleanup.
That was one of the I think, kind of dramatic parts of the story, is that here we have a company that was charged with pollution, that no doubt was looking at the balance sheet and was thinking about how much, if they did indeed have to do this cleanup, how much it was going to cost them. So rather than spending the money on that, what they did was they spent the money on, as you say, on public relations and on lawyers' bills to try to stave off the payout for the cleanup. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that they spent hundreds of millions of dollars trying to avoid doing anything about the problem. So they ended up spending a lot of money. I don't know what the cleanup, what the various costs of the cleanup as compared to the cost of trying to avoid the cleanup are, but they were spending money one way or another. And I'm sure that that some shareholders, at least, they were saying, well, we want to know how much money you're spending on avoiding dealing with the problem.
That's right. And that essentially was, what we could legitimately ask of the company as investors. How much are you spending here? And they finally told us. And it's on the website, and they give us a figure, they release every year how much more they continue to pay. And now what they're doing is, the cleanup still has not started, even though it's about 7 or 8 years into the planning. And one of the things that really was a very serious issue for many years was the denial that even PCBs were harmful or had any kind of potential harm. And so the company, we had really offered to work with the company using the network of faith communities and schools that we have up and down the river to do some education, just so that people were not eating out of the river every day, as many poor families were.
Hmm.
But you know, that would have been an acknowledgement that there was a problem, so they wouldn't do that.
So we're about at the point where we have to wrap up here. Mm-hmm. You're a ways from retirement now. You think you're going to continue to do this work?
I'm probably one of the last people in my community who will retire. And you know, that's in religious life today, we call it the myth of eternal youth. You know, even at 50 years old, you're still one of the young sisters. So I expect to be involved in this for quite a while. Hope so, anyway. Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you very much for spending some time talking with us. We appreciate it.
I appreciate the invitation, and thanks again to everybody. Mm-hmm.
Sister Patricia Daly, she is a Dominican sister of Caldwell, New Jersey. She's been, for a couple of decades now, been working in this area, corporate responsibility, socially responsible investing. She's the executive director of the Tri-State Coalition for Responsible Investment. This is an organization of Roman Catholic diocesan organizations in the New York metro area. And as I mentioned also, she represents them to the National Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility. And if you'd like to find out more about that, you can look at their website. That is iccr.org.